sorry that we can't solve all of them, but I think if we work on a few things, it will help. And we, I think, have the power, in addition to voting, and my brother came up with the new hashtag, dominate the ballot box. I think we all need to vote and make sure everybody else we know votes, to vote the people who are not environmentalists out, and to get more people who are worried about the environment in. And I heartily recommend we at least, if every one of us on this, at this meeting gets one more person to vote, that will be slightly helpful. And I know we have some people working on various issues, like Chris and a group of people are working on the English Station power plant. And I saw the most recent documentation about what they're planning on doing, what UI is planning on doing to stop the water from leaking from the plant into the Mill River. And I don't know. I don't understand what will happen to the water if they, stop it from leaking into the Mill River. That way, won't it just collect in the basement of the power plant buildings? But I don't know. We'll have to ask them when we can. And there's another group of people working on the Yale New Haven Hospital Neuroscience Center garage issue. And I remember at our last meeting, Kevin, you suggested that maybe they might want to rethink that, since a lot of doctors might decide they're not going to work from their offices all the time and they're going to do more teledoc stuff. So I think that's important. But if at any time any of you want to comment, please do. I'm happy to hear every comment. And I also want to talk, we have another group who's working on leaf blowers. And you know, they spread viruses among all the horrible things they do, as do hair dryers. I'm not sure why anyone would use a hair dryer at this point. My hairdresser was the one who told me that hair dryers spread viruses, but I suggest we stop using things like that at least until this is over, perhaps forever. Leaf blowers anyway. So if anybody wants to comment on any of the documentations I sent, I'm more than happy to take your comments about what you think we might do about the pesticide issue, since DEP does not seem like they're on our side with stopping the pesticides from being sprayed, even though we passed the city ordinance asking that they not do it. So anyway, anybody have any suggestions? You can just raise your hands or speak or whatever you want. And Dawn will unmute you. Jeannie's got her hand raised, Dawn.
You know, you can unmute yourself if you're on a computer by pressing the space bar, but y'all probably know that. Laura, I want to thank and very much commend you for preparing that list. And so can you tell us, when we see those signs, what would you recommend that we do, that we call DEEP and explain the day on which the pesticides were, to keep note of the weather, and then explain our concern? What would you recommend that we do? And if we call, can you provide the number? I've done that in the past, but wondering if that would be all right to.
Well, you might notice,
you've called in the past.
Yes. So you might note that under the list of pesticide application flags, there is a list of my communications with DEP, which has the phone number and the email address and some other communications information. And the head of the pesticide program is named Diane Jorsey. And you can read that after about my third email to her, she decided she was not going to take any more of my complaints, and she was just going to contact the companies and write them a letter and tell them that the winds were too high when they sprayed. By the way, I think on the labels for these pesticides, some of which are like the one of which they sprayed per diamond is banned in New York, and I think they sprayed dicamba, and they sprayed some other awful things. But you will note that I think on the labels it says they shouldn't be spraying when the winds are faster than 10 miles an hour because it can cause drift. Drift means the stuff they spray doesn't stay where they spray it. It just blows everywhere onto other people's property. It definitely blows onto city property. They're even spraying the stuff on city property because they spray between the sidewalk and the street on the green grass that belongs to the city. So the fact that they're spraying poison on public property really is just awful. And I think the city should have something to say about that. I don't know how, but I don't know. But anyway, I do suggest that everybody who sees one of those little yellow flags writes a note about, writes down the address and the date of the application and the company, and usually there's a phone number on it, and then called DEP and said, I noticed this, can you find out what they sprayed for me? I've called some of the companies, but some of them refused to tell me. And I think the more we can add to this list. I've only been walking around in my neighborhood, but if you're all walking around in your neighborhoods and you see these little yellow flags and you make lists of them, we can compile a good record of how much poison is being sprayed on us. And I think we all need to do that. So thank you, Jeannie. Great idea. Good suggestions. And if anybody can read if you can't scroll down in my document, I can always give you the information.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Anybody else?
This is Kathy. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I know we've talked about this before. This is a suggestion that gets made to me by others, and I'm passing it along. Someone suggested that we make similar little flags of a different color that say something about the voluntary pesticide ban in New Haven and maybe some information about you know, whatever information we want to put on them. And we've generally said, oh, that's not such a good idea because then we would be putting these things on private property and we don't want to go there. But it just occurred to me as you were talking about the tree belts that those are public property. And so perhaps we might want to reconsider. Again, it's not my idea, and I'm not volunteering to do it, but I get reminded of this concept about two or three times a year, so I just figured I'd pass it on.
Well, maybe if those flags were available, I would put that on my yard.
I'm not sure if we lost Laura. Laura, are you back?
I'm here. I think I'm here.
Yep, I can hear you.
Sorry, I'm with computers. Kathy, tell us one more time what the flags would do. Because I've never heard this before.
The flags would mention the voluntary pesticide ban. And they would basically be suggesting not using pesticides.
Right. Okay, Iris?
I think that's a brilliant idea. I would put a sign on my lawn, this lawn does not use pesticides. Something small, like maybe the size of that, the yellow sign, maybe a pink sign. Something like that. I think it's a brilliant idea. I really like it because I'm so upset about this. I mean, I think I joined this committee because of the pesticide application. And I think our, we're paying for government to protect us. And well, let's not go there. Anyway, I like the idea.
Can I jump in?
Yes.
So Nancy Alderman had these pesticide-free lawn signs that she had with butterflies on them that were quite attractive. I had one in my house for a number of years. I thought they were pretty effective because the butterflies grab people's attention. The private property owners can apply whatever pesticides they want without having to put up one of those yellow signs. So we may not get the total sense of how much pesticides are being applied. But I think if you saw a yellow tag, and then if you had a flyer that said a little bit of information about the pesticide voluntary ban, or, you know, some information around that, that you just stick in people's doors, maybe some social pressures might cause them to rethink their applications. So three quick comments.
Okay. Hmm. So yes, it might be a good idea to send letters to all these people. And now I have a list of all the properties that have applied pesticides. So it would be, I have asked many times for the health department to help us and to alert people that the city has a voluntary pesticide ban, because clearly these people who are doing this either don't know or don't care. But we even drafted a letter and on our board, and we could have it sent out, but I was hoping the health department would do it so that we did not have to do it personally. But I guess maybe we do have to do it, and maybe I'll just have to walk around and put the letter in each of the mail slots. Iris?
I have a few questions, comments, but I'll try to be short. So I do use a pesticide company that they used an organic substance, and they showed it to me. But they also, they said, but they have to put the sign for 24 hours. And that's, I asked right. them if they could have a different sign. And they said, no, there's no sign. So I wanted to cancel my subscription with them. But I don't have an effective alternative. I was just upset that there's no differentiation between pesticides. If I have the sign on, my neighbors say, oh, Iris has a sign on, then, you know, we'll do that too. So I am, I'm trying to figure out for myself what to do. And, you know, and also if we could offer, I used it for, I have that service just for the weeds. So, but when people see the sign, they see the sign.
Well, you know, there's one company, The Giving Tree, that uses poison, but they also use organic stuff, and they have this little green and white sign for their organic stuff. It's on my neighbor's lawn across the street at the moment. So I don't know.
I don't want to support a company that does both, but I don't, at this point, I could probably try the natural remedies. I know it works for some people. I could try it again.
You're going in and out. Let's see. So Aaron and Robbins G2 joined us. I don't know who they are. But anyway, if anybody else has a comment to make about the pesticides or the leaf blowers or anything else, feel free to make it. I'm sorry we can't meet in person and talk about this, because I think maybe that would be better. I think if we can't meet inside City Hall at our next gathering, perhaps we should meet outside on the green and discuss this, where everybody's listening and it's a public space, because I think people just don't know or don't get it. And as Chris just pointed out, private property owners do not have to put up signs, and the signs only have to stay up for 24 hours. But I don't know if you've noticed that the smell, which means that I'm guessing the poison effect, lasts a lot longer than that. Anyway, anybody else have a comment?
Yes, this is Kathy again.
Hi.
I just wondered if people saw there was a story in the New York Times recently on the 18th of May talking about the fact that homeowners use up to 10 times more pesticide per acre than farmers do.
Yes, I sent that out. I sent a link to that out with the documents for this meeting.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
You're welcome. Yes, it is really terrible. And we do need to make people aware of it. And I get the printed edition of the Times, and I don't think they put that in the print edition. It was just online. So we need to spread that editorial, that op-ed far and wide, because it's very, very important. Mary, do you have a comment?
No, I've lost pictures and everything else, so I'm just going to sit and listen.
Okay, sorry. Anybody else? Okay. I think this is an ongoing situation, and I think all the things everybody suggests, calling DEP every time we see one of these applications and asking them to find out what it was for us. I mean, you can look online and find the wind speed at timeanddate.com, which I did for all of these, and it's a lot of work, but I think someone needs to do this, and I think the large accumulation of a list makes a very big impact, especially now when what people are breathing is causing them to live or die, we know it even more than we did before. I mean, we always knew that everything we were breathing was iffy, but I think now that we realize that this respiratory virus is causing even more trouble with people who have any other issues, we don't want to exacerbate anything. Why should we be doing things that are poisoning us? And anyway, yeah, I know. I'm preaching to the choir. You're all here because you get it. And I realize that. So, Kevin?
Yeah, and this is actually going back to your earlier point about meetings. It's not about pesticides per se, but I mean, it's too early to start talking about in-person meetings, and we're not going to do that next month.
No.
But, I think one of the issues is beginning to think about how we transition back. And this is an issue I know that's going to be across City Hall, that I'm sure Aisha is dealing with this in terms of the meetings that she runs. I don't know that engineering runs meetings, but how do we gradually transition back to in-person meetings? How do we accommodate people who don't feel comfortable with in-person meetings? I'm not suggesting we talk about that tonight, but I do think that it is something we may want to talk about soon. Just the process of how do we decide when it's safe to go back in, and how do we effectively bring people in when they have, you know, reasonable concerns about being in proximity to other people.
Well, so we normally don't meet in July or August because, I don't know, we're only mandated to meet four right. times a year, once a quarter. So our next scheduled meeting is September. And if the weather's good, I figure we can just meet outside then. I mean, I assume, how bad can it be? We could all carry umbrellas if we have to. I would rather do that than have anyone worry about coming to meet us. I'm happy to stand 6 feet apart from everybody and wear a mask if we have to, and, you know, meet in the plaza behind City Hall, or meet on the green, or meet somewhere where it's not going to put a further burden on, you know, our work to save the planet, if that seems okay to the rest of you.
The one thought I had was one of the few silver linings from the pandemic is it has made everyone comfortable with telemeetings and doing things on Zoom. And there are people who are participating in meetings on Zoom who would not show up at in-person meetings.
Yes.
And don't want to lose that. And so figuring a way that we can do both would be a good thing. And there may be some technical issues with that, but I think it's doable.
Yes, I agree that there are some benefits to our being able to include people who cannot come in person to City Hall. And perhaps one of us could just take a computer and set it up in the room for those people who want to join by computer. I know that's a little bit difficult, but we can see if we can work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we see, at least we have learned a lot of things from having to do this, that we are capable of many more interesting, innovative ways of accomplishing things than we ever imagined. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see. Is Chris still here? No.
Chris so is not still here. Kathy just posted something in the chat.
Oh, yeah, we can. I think I saw one of those. I think Rick Reardon on my block had one. It was really nice. And yeah, it did have a little butterfly on it. But I think having something specific to New Haven that mentions the voluntary ban might not be a bad idea. We can see. I can ask Rick if he still has that little flag I could show to you. Or, I mean, what would you all think of New Haven City coming up with a little, you know, no pesticides on this lawn sign? Aisha and Dawn, do you think that would be a terrible idea? You can think about it. It's what?
I think it's a nice idea. I think... I don't know how thorough we would be about it, but you know, it's a nice idea to have a little like official sign. But I'll leave it to Dawn. She may have some other ideas.
No, I think it could work. I just want to look into. I know that it is public property, but I know that we also. You know, sidewalks are partially maintained by the homeowner and that tree belt too. So I just want to look into that a little bit. It's just a question kind of bobbling around in my head, like kind of where that, I know it is city right of way, but that just means we kind of have a right to do things on it, but we also kind of rely on people to do maintenance. So just want to, but I think that having a sign, especially if people want to put it there, that, you know, promotes having a pesticide-free lawn or garden could be really nice and important and combat those yellow flags that are everywhere, you know, maybe give people something to think about.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have to be on the tree belt. It could be on people's lawns proper.
Yeah, that definitely could work out. I think that'd be good. And I also... I could share with you, we had a forestry school student, School of the Environment student, looking at, you know, doing kind of broad research on best practices across the nation on looking at native gardens for front lawns, and some of that included pesticide-free stuff. So I could share, she kind of made a comprehensive list of resources, what others are doing, you know, and may give us some ideas for this group that they may want to look into moving forward.
That would be great.
You know, garden competitions and things like that kind of promote, because she was looking at primarily, you know, lawns inherently don't add a lot of value. Like we had that, you know, having pollinator species in your front lawn or doing something else other than grass, which requires a lot of maintenance. And is a reason a lot of people use pesticides, you know. And I see in my neighborhood a lot of alternatives to grass and front lawns. And I think maybe highlighting some of those, or maybe having some sort of, like you're saying, a sign or some sort of promotion that gets people excited about doing that in their front yards could be really nice. But I could share that document with you.
Thanks. That would be great. Iris, you had your hand raised, I noticed.
Yeah, so
Iris, you keep freezing. We can't. We can't hear you. You don't have a good connection. Sorry. Oh,
I think she's gonna call her phone.
Dawn, Madeline, my daughter, and I have been out walking a lot, and we noticed the amazing bioswale at Edgewood School. It is like beyond.
Very large.
Have you noticed? Yeah.
Oh, is it growing?
Oh,
prolifically?
Yeah. It's astounding. Just, you know, a little bit less traffic, a little bit less pollution, and the thing really went to town. So I will have to take a picture of it.
If you want to send me a picture, that would be good.
Yes, we will. Okay, so we have some good ideas. Flags or little signs to notify everybody that there are no pesticides on lawns. And Dawn, you'll share a list of resources that was already compiled about what things people are doing. And if everybody feels like it and you see those little yellow flags, I know it's a pain in the neck. We stop every time we see one, we write all the information down and then we add it to a list. But I, you know, especially if your neighbors are spraying pesticides, you might want to do it just for the heck of it so that you can actually see how many times you're getting poison sprayed on you by people who live right around you. It's pretty astounding when you compile the whole thing, as you might see by the list I compiled.
So this is Kathy jumping in. Just very briefly, I want to mention that Dawn knows this, and I'm sure many folks on here know, but in case somebody doesn't know, there's also a really strong connection between native plantings instead of grass and protecting the water, because the even when you don't have a main garden or a bioswale, those plants have deep roots and they can really manage a lot of the water that's coming down off of people's roofs and onto their yards. So there's a strong connection between doing native plantings that don't require pesticides and pesticide issue on the one hand and clean water issues on the other hand. That was, I just wanted to, as we know, environmental things, everything is connected, so.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. So you all see what Iris, oh, you can't all see because some of you are on the phone, but Iris wrote that the people who are applying the pesticides for these companies are not necessarily wearing protective gear. I noticed that the people who are using a leaf blower from Greater New Haven Landscaping finally are wearing masks this week. I mean, I feel like all of us on the block should be granted masks to wear when they're using their leaf blowers if they have to wear a mask. And they were never wearing them before, I noticed just this week. And the fact that the pesticide applicators are not wearing protective gear, they're really supposed to wear masks and goggles and gloves. And it said, I read on one of the labels of I think the Prodiamine, it said chemical resistant gloves, which we really need for our healthcare professionals now, and we shouldn't be wasting on people who are trying to spray poison all over. But yeah, and then their clothing is full of it too, and it's really, they just should not be using this. And none of these companies, at least, and almost none of them are in New Haven. These are people coming from outside New Haven into our city and inflicting this upon us so that they can earn money. Well, I don't know. I don't think that's right. And I really hope that we can do something about changing the attitude of people who don't live in our city and think that it's okay to come and spread their bad practices here. anyway, yeah. Anybody else have a comment? Well, I think I have taken this issue, the issue of the pesticides and the leaf blowers up with the environmental specialist at the health department. His name is Brian. He's very nice, but he doesn't seem to have any authority to do anything in particular, which is why I was hoping that Director Bond would join us this evening, but I guess she got waylaid. She was supposed to have a half an hour to be with us before she went to her next meeting, but I can imagine that in these circumstances, there's no, people probably just don't get to choose what they do with their time. So I think we have some really good ideas, and I want all of us to keep watch on things like the English Station Project and the Neuroscience Garage Project and any of these other big projects that might seem like they are not as good ideas as they seemed like they were several months ago. I mean, Pat Dillon, I might have mentioned this at the last meeting, said something to me about she's working on contact-free elevators in tall buildings now. And there are just so many things we never thought about before, that so many environmental concerns we now have that we need to be cognizant of. And Pat Wallace of the Dwight community management team mentioned to me that there are about 24 bus stops with kids who would be standing around breathing the fumes from idling car engines if they put up that garage at the St. Rafe's campus. And I don't know, we just have a lot of work to do, I think, and I hope we can continue to do good work, and I hope that this pandemic is going to spur us on to do more and not stop us from doing anything. Yeah, okay. Let's see. Okay. Kathy, yeah, in places like DC, yes. And did everyone notice that I think wherever it was flooding in Michigan last week, it was on a river, was it in Midlands, Michigan? The Dow Chemical Factory that makes these pesticides is on that river, and nobody has, I see Iris holding her head in her hands, nobody has said anything about whether that building got flooded, but I'm pretty sure they're hiding things that they don't want to tell us about. And also, did you know that Monsanto has almost reached a settlement agreement with the people who sued about Roundup? And now there's another class action suit that's brought by farmers in reference to dicamba, which is another pesticide that they are using in abundance in our neighborhoods. So the fact that people are bringing these class action suits, and the fact that they've gotten this far will hopefully have some impact, especially when Monsanto has to pay out the, I can't remember how much money it is at the moment, but it's a lot of money that they are on the verge. They're always going to be on the verge of paying it out, and then they'll try to get out of it. But at least we know it's getting closer and closer and closer. And I'm hoping it will send a message to all these companies that they should be making chemicals for good reasons, not for bad reasons. And if they want to make disinfectants, okay. But if they want to make things to kill grass and everything else, it's not okay. DC has a stormwater fee. Yeah. Don't we pay a stormwater fee, Don?
No.
Oh, we don't?
And a little bit of history, there was a proposal to create a stormwater authority. And the idea was that stormwater causes all sorts of environmental and economic harm, which it does. And the stormwater tax would have applied to nonprofits, because nonprofits own property that serves as a non-point source of pollution, and there's a very good reason to go after them. That ran into a buzzsaw. Among other things, churches were saying, look, we don't have the money to pay our operating costs, and we have parking lots, and we would be hit with this tax. And so a stormwater fee makes a great deal of sense. Politically, it's a lot harder to sell.
Well, can it be, I mean, don't we pay one way or another? Do we pay some other way?
You're being entirely too rational.
You do pay a fee. Well, at least I'm not as familiar with WPCA's fee structure yet, but it's not linked to how much impervious surface you have. So usually it's linked to water use. And it's some percentage of your water use, and then they attack on and added, say you 135% of your water use, assuming some sort of runoff from is going into the sewers. The problem is that you could have a big building, like a big box store that has one toilet and like a sink, you know, and doesn't use a lot of water, but obviously generates a lot of runoff. And so the idea behind the fee is to link it more to the amount of impervious surface that you have. And there would be ways to maybe structure it so that, you know, maybe it's a little bit different for commercial versus residential but without getting into those details, the idea is to really link what you're paying for stormwater to the impervious surface on your property, so that if you reduce that impervious surface or you capture the flow in a rain garden, you can get a credit, and then that incentivizes people to do these practices.
And Dawn is also an expert. Engineers tend to do that as a matter of course.
There also are some incentives that are for stormwater management in our new zoning, in the commercial gateway corridors, and also in the BD3 zoning amendments that we proposed most recently that are before the Board of Alders. So there are some, you know, strong environmental incentives in those.
I suspect most folks aren't aware of the BD3 proposal. You might want to briefly talk about that.
Sure. So the BD3 proposal, if that's okay, if everybody's interested, I don't want to go veer too off for the agenda. And I'll also, you know, Don has also had a hand in helping craft the green ordinances, which are, you know, they're evolving, and we're sort of leading them on an incremental, you know, where opportunities come up. But the proposed changes to the BDC zone, which is essentially the Route 34 corridor and some adjacent properties. It was really, the BD3 zone was really created, you know, as a bioscience corridor. And so what the new zoning regs propose is that to allow for a greater density, so greater FAR, but to have some offset included, because lab buildings in particular can have greater environmental footprints. So some incentives to go for a higher LEED rating, and also, you know, and embedded in that is stormwater. And then there's also some other stormwater provisions, green roof provisions, and public open space design guidelines associated with it. So there's some steps. What it basically does is it creates a pathway to go to increase floor area ratio to make a bigger building by taking these various, meeting various checklists with, you know, environmental benefits attached to them.
Okay, good. Hi, Arn, thanks for joining us. So it would be good to get the pesticides out of the stormwater. That would be very good. So we should work on all this stuff. And you know what? Maybe we should charge people who use the pesticides on their lawns more money for their stormwater fees. Yes. Did everyone see Aaron Good sent us a link to a New Haven Independent article about moves to take the paying for rain. So you can all look in that in the chat box. And if you are on the phone and you can't see it that way, I can email it to you. In fact, maybe I'll just do that after the meeting. So anyway, yes. So I think we have a lot of suggestions for now. So what do you, okay, so we know we have a couple of suggestions of what to do about the pesticides. I don't know what we're going to do about the leaf blowers, except draft an ordinance banning them. And I was hoping we had a group that was doing it, but they have not gotten back to me. I think the whole virus pandemic has waylaid them, because one of them, or maybe two of them, are emergency room doctors, and I think they're a little busy. But one of them who's an emergency room doctor can't sleep, because when she has the night shift and she comes home and she tries to sleep and people on her street are using leaf blowers, it makes her life really difficult. And I think that, I was hoping that at this point we could just do a temporary moratorium in the city on leaf blowers and pesticides. I don't know how to do that, but considering there's a world health crisis, I think we should think about how. Iris, Eugene, you want to say something?
No, I can't see myself.
Oh, no. my daughter could help you with that, but I don't know how. I think you can't see yourself because you don't have your camera turned on. That's my guess.
It might be. I don't know. I fiddled around, and I figured you'd catch me fiddling around and looking lost. But I would say, I would like to find a way for us to come up with a little fund. I'll contribute $100 to buy flags people can put on their lawn by people who are proud and interested in trying to preserve the atmosphere. And the sign says, mine is fertilizer free and uses only organic fertilizer. But like if I had one of those flags, I could ask two or three people, but I live in an apartment building, so I don't have neighbors. But I don't live in a heavily lawned area, but I'd like to make it easier like that.
Well, thank you.
That's all.
I was hoping the city or some fund, some grant fund would have some money so that private citizens don't have to pay for something like that. But I don't know. Iris, you have something to say? We can't hear you.
You got it. I gave you an audio problem.
Look,
sorry, Iris.
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
So I, for a moment, forgot we're on the pandemic and we can't meet, but I would really like to see if we could meet or get some students or school students to and make little square pink signs about and just sticking it in our garden, something, you know, with the butterfly, this lawn doesn't use pesticides or doesn't use synthetic pesticides, something like that, that will catch the kids' attraction and the neighbor's attraction. Like, instead of shaming them, just, and then if I could get my neighbors across the street to put a sign like that and the block. And now, you know, now with the pandemic, you see these hearts, people are putting red hearts all around. Maybe we could put like pink butterflies, and that will be a sign that this lawn doesn't use synthetic pesticides or something like that. I really like that idea. And I would really like some students who are, you know, if there were some students who could do that, maybe if somebody well, somebody, no, okay, you know, maybe if there was some grant money to do that for students to do it, or, you know, just like 4-hour meeting, and all these art school teachers have these option of laminating paper, you know, so we could just make up little signs and put them in our gardens and use the same sticks that the pesticide people apply. So,
well, I would like it to be an official city sponsored endeavor, and not it to be something, you know, I would like it to be something really official, and I would like our to have, I would like us to have the city behind us on this initiative. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's possible, but I would rather it come from the city. We are a city board. It would be good if we could do that.
So how can we, how do we put pressure on the city?
We don't have to put pressure on them. We ask them nicely how to go about it, and maybe they'll tell us if it's possible.
Can I just say something about the sign?
Yes.
Where I sit, I see people walking back and forth all the time, and I feel like now is the time. You have such an audience. I mean, it's really an audience.
Yes.
There have never been so many people on the streets.
Right. Aisha, you were going to say?
I just wanted to go back to something Eugene said. Really, our city is over 70% renters. And so, like, the actual, you know, I think we can ask homeowners to, you know, sort of voluntarily, you know, maybe assist with putting together some language and offering support around a sign, but it could be something that people download if if there was
an idea
to make it consistent and just, you know, figure out how to laminate it or put it up themselves. Which is done, you know, that's done fairly often. I think, you know, one of the tricky things is, you know, a lot of people in the city don't have lawns, or they don't have control over their lawns. You know, they're beholden to landlords. So I think there also would need to be some outreach, you know, towards commercial property owners, and not just burden I think homeowners have, you know, they have an opportunity to have great impact on this, but, you know, a lot of city residents don't sort of have a choice about whether or not pesticides are put on their lawn.
But I think a lot of the people who are overusing, who are using the pesticides and overusing them, are homeowners. A lot of them. Because if you walk around in our neighborhood, first of all, if you have a homeowner, you're likely to have a bigger lawn. If you're a renter, you're likely to be in an apartment. But second of all, I can tell you from many years of experience walking around in the summer that while there are pesticides put on commercial properties, the homeowners do the worst damage. They just do on their lawns that are bigger. Hi, Giovanni. Welcome. Eugene, you
want to
say something else?
Well, I disagree with you and would only say, I'll go talk to the Board of Health if you want, because maybe we just have to tell them that they should do it rather than asking them. I don't think they seem as emotional as we are. And
yeah, well,
maybe we start with an example to them by doing it small. I didn't articulate very well. Sorry. Thanks.
It's fine. Well, you know, getting hold of the health department seems to be a bit difficult right now because they are very preoccupied with other things. But you're right. We do have to keep pressing them. And I guess our board should write a letter to Director Bond, since she couldn't come and meet with us this evening, and tell her what we want.
Not your fault at all. That's really good that you're being as assertive as you can be. But maybe we set an example for them. And I'll knock on 20 doors if you tell me to. But I need somebody organized like you to get me to tell nowhere to walk.
Yeah.
Knock.
Okay.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you, Jean. Okay. Well, we can definitely consider sending people out. Anybody else have anything to add about this?
Yep, it's Kathy again.
Okay, then Ern.
So I'm just thinking about how, I'm not sure what the city's policy is on sending like little newsletter blurbs to folks with their tax bills, but the, you know, homeowners get tax bills, as do landlords. And so maybe there could be some kind of blurb that goes out with the tax bills that just mentions the fact that we do have this pesticide ban, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not sure what that, how that works, and I'm not sure if anybody on this call has any idea. And I'm sure that, you know, it's probably, there would probably be a lot of pushback, because otherwise everybody under the sun would be trying to get their issue sent out that way. So, but, you know, so it is a communication that goes out, you know, from the city, and it wouldn't cost any more postage to include it in there.
Dawn or Aisha or Giovanni, do any of you have any comments on whether you think we could send out something about the pesticide ban in the tax bills? Anybody?
I don't know how that decision gets made. I know that during the development of the climate sustainability framework, there was a lot of different types of environmental and climate related messaging that was desired to be sent, you know, with the tax bill as something that goes to property owners. So, you know, if we were to do that, we might want to like look at like kind of a greater environmental message that we'd be sending out that maybe covers a range of climate related things. But I don't know what the process is yet.
Okay.
I'll figure that out.
Thanks. Ern, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I think mailers are a really good idea, but what about the things like sending it out, not necessarily maybe through tax letters, but either electric or more likely your water bill, because that's certainly something that is, I guess, maybe tied together with the same thing with water runoff and such.
We'd have to ask the water authority if they would be willing to do it. And my guess is they wouldn't, but we could see, well, first of all, the Water Authority sends bills to people in New Haven and people in surrounding communities where they don't have a voluntary pesticide ban. So that would be an issue, because they would have to insert something in every bill. But we could ask the Regional Water Authority, and mm-hmm. I'm happy to do it. Iris?
I could ask. I attend the water...
Great idea.
Water planning council meetings, and I could ask if anybody does that, because their water plan, the prevention and pesticide use is not emphasized, to my opinion. Because I think the water authority, getting it in your bill, but people don't get paper bills anymore. But I could ask, because I think they should be the ones that would be concerned. And we did ask them about what pesticides they monitor, because they do monitor. They told us over 40 pesticides. We never got an answer from them. I could look into that. We never got an answer.
No, and we keep asking.
And they used to monitor the watershed and for pesticides. They stopped doing that, I don't know how many years ago. So yeah, I didn't follow up on that one.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that. The Water Authority, we and the Water Authority have had a very interesting back and forth. We notified them about the 200,000 gallons of water a day, the up to 200,000 gallons of water a day that Yale might be using on the golf course. And ever since we notified them, They've been hemming and hawing about it, and we know that many things have been going on, but I think they didn't even know how much water Yale was using on their golf course. And I think when they realized it, they were astounded, but they won't talk about it publicly. It's the whole, everything about the Water Authority seems fascinatingly complex and unpublic, I would say, even though they came to our meeting more than once and they seem to be very transparent, but there are, seem to be many things that go on with the Water Authority that are not known to us.
So just one more thing. So now the Water Authority, right now our regional Water Authority, they're in a crunch because of COVID. They're losing revenue, and I don't know if they're getting bailed out. So this is just one thing just for now. And then the other thing, Yale has been has been using a lot less water from the Water Authority because they reuse their water for the energy that they're generating. And for the Water Authority, that's a big loss of revenue. So I don't think they really care for them. Oh, yay, the golf course is using our water and we'll get some revenue in. So right now, I don't think, I think we have to go through the venues through the Yale students. I don't know, the venues at the School of Forestry, the environmentalists, but I'm not sure. But I don't think they would care about the amount of water. I'm really concerned about the pesticides that they're using, but we're going back. That's like,
well, no, you know, Madeline, my daughter, who's sitting right here, and she's not on screen with me, but she is sitting right here. She and I went to the golf course one day last week, and there was a big sign next to the closed gate to the golf course because the golf course is closed. It was a notice to the people who walk in there that they had applied pesticides within the past 24 hours. And then the day before that, the gate was open and I drove in and there was a sign next to the road warning everyone to keep on the road and stay off the grass. And the smell of pesticides was very apparent, and they've clearly been using a lot of pesticides there. And, you know, the Yale golf course was encroaching on
Mulpey Lake.
And so they were probably spraying pesticides on the property at Mulpey Lakes. And I don't know what you think, but if any of you use the Mulpey Lakes recreation area, I don't know if Yale put up a sign at the boundary of their property in Mulpey Lakes to warn everybody that their property had been sprayed with pesticide. And I know a friend of mine who's recovered from a heart attack who lives in Upper Westville and walks around there had no idea that the pesticides had been sprayed. And I find it terribly distressing that people are not notified that these pesticides are rampant there.
So I think we have to go. Okay. I don't know if this is for this conversation, but I think we have to try our other venues through Yale to see if I know you tried by yourself, but I think we have to try to set up another meeting with the facilities, the people who are in charge of the golf course.
Yes, I agree. Well, we invited people from the Yale Climate Action Committee to come and meet with us, and they declined. So
I'll go with you.
Okay, Aisha, we do know about the abutters list, but it only applies to the people immediately next door to you. So it is not really effective, and you have to re-enlist in it every single year. And so they make it as hard as possible for you to be a part of it. And it's not really, it's not effective enough. If you're walking down your block and there are 30 houses on your block and five of them sprayed pesticide, but they're not next door to you, don't you want to know if your dog or your kid is walking on the grass between the sidewalk and the street? What poison might be there? I do. And what might get into the stormwater? And, you know, I think it's very important that we know all these things. So thank you for pointing that out. I hope all of you who have, who live in houses are on the abutters list, which you can access by the link Aisha just posted. Anyway, yeah, so much for that. I think Nancy Alderman was the one who enacted that abutters list or got it enacted, and the Department of Environmental Protection has done everything it can to water it down, as it does with every other thing that tries to protect us from toxins, which we don't want to be exposed to. And I think, yeah, now that we have this virus that everybody's incredibly worried about, I think we can start linking some other things to being of concern to our health in addition to that virus. Any other good ideas? And thanks, Kathy, for speaking to the sewer people about messaging. Of course, they suggest that social media notifications are more likely to be read because they don't want to, you know, line up with the greenies. I can understand that, but we will have to prevail upon them, I think. Anyway, so I guess the Environmental Advisory Council is going to have to talk to the sewer people, the water people, and the health department and see what we can do to try and get the message out that people should be aware that they are being exposed to all of these things. I don't know if you read the PowerPoint from the presentation on leaf blowers that I sent out again from the emergency room doctor, Karen Jubanek, who came and told us about leaf blowers. But when Madeline read it, she was astounded at all the horrible facts about all the junk we breathe and all the noise and air pollution that it causes. So I just hope we get the word out about this. And if you feel like sharing any of the stuff I emailed to anybody, feel free. I will be more than happy to have everybody see it. And if you feel like sharing the link that Aisha sent out about the abutters list with everyone, do that. And if you feel like sharing the stuff Aaron sent about the rain, the Stormwater Authority paying for rain, share that and we'll put it in the minutes. And I see the meeting's being recorded, so that's good. And we're doing what we can. We are meeting. We have the New Haven Register and the New Haven Independent here. And if anybody wants to talk to either of the reporters about any of these things privately, they are here. You can message Emily from the Independent or Brian from the Register in the chat box. And and Emily just shared her email address with us. So these are all good things. And so did Brian. So let's keep on spreading the word about avoiding all this stuff. I mean, I'm finding that the air is so much better now just from not having traffic around, even though most of the pollution is being made by trucks, not cars. In New Haven, it seems like the cars were contributing a good amount of the bad smell and bad air. And the sky is bluer, as Madeline pointed out to me, and it's just so nice without all this stuff. So the more stuff we can eliminate, the happier I will be. Anybody else have anything to say about any of this? I think we have a list of directions to go in. And thank you, everybody, Kathy and Eugene and Aisha and Jeannie and Dawn and Ern and Iris and everybody who suggested something we can do. We will do it. We will do them all.
Great. So this is Kathy. And
Laura.
Yeah, Kathy, then Iris.
Okay. This is a different topic. So if Iris's thing is still on this topic, I'll wait.
Yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge Laura for being persistent, and I think we're going to get there. So I just want to thank you for your, for, you know.
You're welcome.
Your thank hard you. Work.
Thanks. You too.
Okay.
Okay. Next topic, Kathy.
This is an energy topic, and it has to do with the community, the effort to create community shared solar and have legislation passed at the state level. And we do have legislation now at the state level for 25 megawatts, I believe, per year for 6 years. I've been at some of the meetings, video or whatever you call them, you know, webinar conferences to figure out how people are going to be able to participate. And so this, it's being called SCEF, which is Shared Clean Energy Facilities. And I have to say, it's not really looking much like the sort of thing we envisioned, partly because the number of megawatts that have been approved are not nearly going to be able to be enough to serve the people that are in this, you know, the lower income people, the renters, the people that don't have access to a roof. There are just thousands and thousands more households that fall into the into the general eligibility as set forth in the legislation than could actually participate in the program. And so they've been talking about using lotteries, about whether, you know, whether it should be something that has a geographic component where, you know, there's a, where if the facility is going to be located someplace that those folks somehow get priority. Of course, they're asking, you know, nonprofit organizations that are serving the lower income populations what, you know, what they want to see. And organization-wise, of course, they're looking for larger, you know, a better chance for the low-income folks to be able to participate. And so the utilities are looking at just giving a benefit to people who already have seeking assistance, energy assistance from the utilities, because they know who those people are. And so there's not a lot of muss and fuss about determining income eligibility. That said, there's another type of thought, which is that some of the other folks that have other categories of participants that had been outlined in the municipalities, I mean, in the legislation, such as municipalities, and other types of entities, people that can't access solar because they're renters but aren't necessarily low-income people. All these other groups, the debate is that if we don't get the buy-in from those other folks, that we'll never be able to make the program larger. And so so that's kind of where things are at. And I have to say, the whole thing is kind of a disappointment, but it's just because there's so much more that could be done along the lines of community shared solar, and other things are being done, but not in what we originally thought was going to be the place that it would be happening. So I don't know if that made sense, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that update. So I noticed, did you see there was a debate about a company that wants to put up a shared solar array in Hamden? Yes, they want to knock down trees on Mount Gaylord Mountain Road and put up shared solar. I'm hoping it's not going to be, you know, one or the other, that we have solar energy and no trees, or, you know, I don't want one or the other. I want both. I hope we can have that.
I couldn't agree more. And it's kind of surprising that most of the proposals for facilities are in rural areas. Most of the need is in the urban areas. And then you have the situation in Hamden involving cutting down trees, which is sort of like cutting off your nose to spite your face. It just does not make sense. So yeah. In the case of a situation like that, I think, you know, we support the Hamden tree people, you know, but that decision is separate from the legislation. That's the siting council that makes those kind of decisions. And so hopefully they'll think carefully about what they do with that one.
Yeah. Ern, do you want to make a comment about that?
Yeah. I mean, this was, you know, the half of the Green Even deal that I put together. I mean, this was a big issue trying to find, you know, the real estate or the property to put it. And one of the big components was to spread it around the city, just like, you know, putting it here, putting it there, putting it here, putting it there. You don't really need to have acres and acres and acres of huge land tracts to do this. That can just be for like remote location. But I mean, one of the big components to this was, you know, putting, you know, solar in places around the city strategically, say for example, like covered walkways. You can put them at bus stations where you can have, climate controlled and pay for itself, you know, bus stops. I mean, these were some of the ideas that I bounced off of, you know, Michael Piscatelli and the entire economic development team. I mean, these are the things that I, you know, basically ranted on all last year about these ideas. It's right there in the paper as far as some of the ideas of, you know, spreading these things around. I mean, you want to talk about community choice aggregation. I mean, you know, I spent almost 9 to 10 months just studying and looking at overseas policies, domestic policy, public policy, you know, urban affairs, reading, you know, looking at like Baltimore's plans, Boston's plans. I mean, this was not some fly-by-night document I put together, and this is the strategies that even places like in Norway and Sweden, they're using, you know, I think I mentioned it, where there's this, you know, metal, you know, artificial tree with these little spinners, and it's, you know, it looks very good in a public space, and it can produce 3,000, you know, watts of power, and you can put these things anywhere. They're safe. You know, they don't endanger anybody in any way, shape, or form. And you can do the same thing strategically with solar panels that are all over the city. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be an eyesore. You make it part of the architecture. You know, I mean, these are just some of the ideas. I mean, I don't know how many meetings I went to, but, you know, several people from Yale. I even had someone from Boston College reach out to me in March of last year about some of these ideas.
Thank you. Well, okay. We have some people from the city who we can take that up with. We as citizens do not have the power to decide what the city does on public bus stops and in public places, but we can certainly, I know the city wants to make everything as energy efficient as possible. So I'm sure they're thinking about all sorts of ideas like that. And I see Iris asks if we can demand public money for energy improvements be only renewable. And Kevin says depends on the funding source. So, yeah. And Kathy says, Ern, you're right. Okay. Yes. Well, okay. So, you know what? We don't live in Hamden. We live in New Haven. And unfortunately, the state legislation doesn't look like what we want. So maybe New Haven could set an example for the rest of the state by spreading the energy out more. I don't know. Aisha and Dawn and Giovanni, is that possible? Yes, Iris?
Just Kathy, do you want to remind everybody about my home project that you're doing with Michael Ohl about the energy efficient thing, that people could still sign up to do that?
Sure. I'll come to that in a moment. I'd like to sort of stay on the topic of the shared clean energy facilities.
Okay.
And then I'd be happy to give an update. So I think one of the things we had been envisioning was, as Ern suggested, lots of smaller arrays. And also, I think we were envisioning that, you know, when you do it on your roof, it's really taking care of a substantial portion of what you would normally be paying for your electric bill. Whereas what they're talking about now with the shared clean energy facilities is giving those participants a $10 to $20 rebate on their monthly bill. Of course, that would be offered to them over the full duration of, you know, 20 or 25 years. So basically, you know, we're talking about large facilities and the utility kind of handing out these rebates through a list that they already have, which to me looks more and more like what we would normally consider to be, the utility scale solar farms.
Yeah.
Even though that's not what it is technically, it's a lot closer to that model than what we had envisioned. And I just want to mention that there is an organization that was formed, and I think we met with them at one point at the Energy at the Environmental Advisory Council, called Raising Green. And I think when we met with them, they were using a different name, which was New Haven Community Solar. But they are a grassroots investment entity that seeks investors to put money to develop these kind of small-scale projects. And so Mike has been working with them to do a few of these locally. You may have seen in the news they did something with Columbus House last year, and they're looking to do some more of those sort of projects. So I don't want to go on about that, but I just want to let you know that people have figured out workarounds to do the small projects and to even get investors to put up the money to pay for the smaller projects. So all is not totally lost.
Right. That's good. I still want to know if our city can put up things on bus shelters or solar arrays on bus shelters or other public spaces that would be beneficial and that would show that New Haven can do this, like we're doing with Bios Whales. Is that possible, Giovanni, Don, and Aisha?
I think it might not be the most cost-effective way to do it. We use solar panels to light like the RRFBs that flash the beacons, you know, that for the pedestrian crossing, you know, those are powered by like a solar panel or something. But I don't know what we would use that energy for on a bus shelter. It's relatively small. It would be costly to install. So, I mean, I think we can, I see what you're saying in looking at ways to install renewables on in the right of way or on public owned property. I think we just would have to look at the most cost effective way to do that. And then who would use that energy? Would it just be for city use or, beyond that?
Well,
right now we're doing schools. We're doing schools and big rooftops because that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
When you get into smaller installations, multiple smaller installations, it may not be, it won't be as cost effective as, and so I think maybe the low hanging fruit is cover all our big roof buildings first and then kind of look at these smaller.
Got it.
Installation.
Okay. Ern, you have another comment?
Yeah. This was something else that I had looked into, and this is, you know, ties back into existing infrastructure. I mean, there's power and wires everywhere, and it's just a matter of metering it or not metering it and having it go back into the local electrical grid. I mean, that's not only one way to, you know, again, get monetary credits, but it's also a way to build resilience into our local economy, the local power, you know, infrastructure. that basically cuts, you know, reliance on, you know, having to port, you know, electricity across, you know, county or state lines. Plus, it also provides jobs, you know, and one of the things that I had actually had a conversation with the local power company last year was that they want to, you know, put these installations, even if they're micro, anywhere we can install them. They have the ability to buy in mass large quantities of, you know, solar power or small wind turbines, you know, again, if they happen to be, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, you know, non-harmful, you know, they're basically ones that, that look like they're architectural. But it's the matter of having the workers and having the city tying into those grids. That was one of the, you know, hard boundaries or barriers I came up against. But I mean, if the city can provide the workers for the job, it's very doable. And the power company will buy the equipment. It just needs to be installed and be part of the electric grid.
Okay. Well, I guess it's something to think about. I mean, I noticed in New Jersey, there was a solar panel on each street light. And I know that we're at a little farther north and maybe that wouldn't work here to provide the power for street lights. But who knows, if we put two solar panels on a bus shelter, could we sell the energy to the electric company or could we use it somewhere in the city building? I don't know. I'm not an electricity expert. I'm glad we're having this discussion. And Kathy, it is duly noted that the vision you had for community solar is not yet being realized the way you want it to be, but something's better than nothing. And as we know, in the state legislature, nothing ever comes out the first time the way you thought it would.
Good point.
Hi, Aisha.
This just has to do with like private development, so it's different, but there are also incentives in the green ordinances for solar, for alternative energy. So, you know, we are doing through zoning, we are, you know, incentivizing and encouraging the use of alternative energy. And then I would also, you know, I guess that type of infrastructure may be easier to contemplate in a place like Long Wharf or sort of the larger development sites. But again, I'm just, you know, I'm speaking more on the private development side. Don and Giovanni would have a better sense of, you know, the public facility side of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Kathy and Iris, do you see anything we can do to try and make the state legislation better? Because if you do, let's do it. And if you think that we should take Ern's suggestion and see if the power companies will buy the solar panels and the whatever else needs to be done for the installation, whatever other equipment we need, and if we could get city workers to do the installations, is that possible? I don't know. Aisha?
I don't know if it's possible to get, that's really, you know, an operations thing, okay, in terms of getting city employees to install, install equipment on public. I would want Giovanni to weigh in on that.
I'm here. Yeah, I was distracted, okay, a phone call.
That was, yeah.
What's
okay.
The question?
The question is, so Ern Pendragon, who is here, consulted with the power company, I guess United Electric, and found that they would be willing to buy, I assume, solar panels and whatever other equipment would be needed to install it, to put solar panels on public right-of-ways like bus shelters and I don't know what other right-of-ways there are, but would it be possible for city employees to do the installation if
the power company? I'm an electrician, and we have very few of those. I think the bigger problem is that there's a very large amount of excavation and sidewalk work and other stuff you'd have to do to connect from the bus shelters and things of that nature back to the power grid.
Got it.
Which would very, very easily absolutely wipe out any of the savings that you would get. So, I mean, it's a great idea, and I think it's something that if we're doing new construction, we would think about, but probably not something that's practical on a retrofit basis.
Got it. Okay. Iris, you have another comment? No. Okay. Okay. Well, it's now after, do you have a comment? Go ahead.
One of the other things was that we could provide jobs training and then hire those people or contract them. That was, you know, one of the things about bringing jobs as part of the New Haven Green Deal.
Yeah. Several people, Florestine Taylor wants us to do that too. Okay. It is now a little after 7 o'clock, and for us, this has been a pretty long meeting. So does anybody else, Kathy is sending something to us. I suggest we call it an evening and mull over all the things we've talked about and spend the summer working toward getting to figuring out how we get better solar energy and not let the state legislature water it down, and see how we can spread the word about the pesticides and the leaf blowers and how we really don't want anyone to use them. And that's my suggestion. So for what it's worth, does anyone else have anything else to add?
Just quick update on I Heart My Home, which is the program to work with individual households, renters, to make energy improvements at their house. As you know, we had a fundraising drive for it. We are getting matched one-to-one with funds from Sustainable CT. And currently we have raised $34,290. We still need to raise a little more than that. So we're still doing fundraising for it. But if you are interested in participating in the program, which some folks here have done, you can reach out to me. Should I put my email in the chat box?
If you want, sure. You can put your email at the Neighborhood Housing Services in the chat box. I'm pretty sure everybody here knows how to find you, but yes, that would be good. Iris and I have participated in the program, and it is very helpful. So thank you. I don't know if anybody else attending this meeting has, but I have found it very helpful. So okay, thanks, Kathy.
The first link that's kind of blue on, well, for me, it shows up blue on blue, so it's hard to read, but that's a link for the fundraising page. And then there's my email, and we're working. It's basically, we're piloting an energy concierge style consultancy for one-on-one work with people that are trying to make energy improvements.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, there we go. I think that's it for our June EAC meeting. I look forward to seeing you all in person. And I don't know if any of the rest of you have been exploring places in New Haven you had not been to before, but Kathy took me to see the West River in Westville, which I had never seen before. And we went to look at it because there's a development, an apartment building being looked at there. And then I went to tour the New Haven Oyster Farm, which was absolutely fascinating. So I recommend that everybody get outside. If you've never been to the Fort Hill Fishing Pier, go there. Go do something that you think would be interesting. Find some place that has some environmental significance and come back and tell us all about it. We will be interested to hear. And thank you all very, very, very much for coming to the meeting. And thank you, Dawn, and thank you, Giovanni, and thank you to Melinda and everybody else who facilitated this meeting. Thank you to Emily Hayes and to Brian Zahn for coming. And we will see you all in September at the next EAC meeting, hopefully in person. So thanks very much, everybody.